win these days has a fax, so we need to allow for certain things to be optional. And there are also, for example, in the contacts, there is the field name and the field organization. So if the registrant or the contact is not an organization, the organization field can be blank. So those are the things that we clarified in here. Can we go to the next slide, please? So this is the sort of output that we have. And in discussions with mainly registries have been the ones that have been raising this issue, is two specific fields that have caused the difference in opinion here. Can we go to the next slide? It's the street and the phone for registrants and contacts. Those are the ones that the feedback we have received in the discussions about the clarification is that these are optional fields in EPP. Therefore, there is no requirement to show them in WHOIS. However, as we said before, the reading of the Spec 4 is that everything that is there is required. In the very same EPP standards, there is language that clarifies that things that are optional in EPP can be considered required by the registry depending on the policy. Here, policy in the ITF world means any other requirements beyond technical. So, for example, registry agreement, consensus policy, etc. Could we go to the next slide, please? Next clarification is 40. Next slide. This is a similar issue, this time in the case of responses to registrar object queries. We are in the spec 4, it had the output show the information of the registrar, two admin contacts, and one technical contact, if memory serves. We are clarifying that it's okay to have only one of each, and you can have multiple if you like. So this is how the output will look like. And the feedback we receive, next slide, please, is that that there should be no requirement to show any contact for the registrars. So the output of such query could look like what we have there without any of the contacts for the registrar. Next slide. And finally, clarifications 18 and 28. These are very they are related. Talk about the uniformity on the output of the queries for domain names, in particularly that the WHOIS protocol is that the WHOIS should be a lookup. So what you need to know what you're looking for in order to get it. There is, of course, in the register agreement a specific clause for searchability. So if a registry would like to offer searchability, they can do it. The only thing is it has to be in the web-based WHOIS, not in the port 43 WHOIS. That's what is described there. So if we can go to the next slide, please. This is the prototypical example that of what the output of a query for a domain name would look like. And what we have received as feedback is that partial match should be allowed. So you will have something like this is in which when you query for a domain name, you don't get the information of the domain name, but you get a list of host objects, name servers that are in the registry, and of course, eventually the name of the domain name, but not the information. You will need to issue a different type of query, which is not specified in the register agreement, in order to get the information from for that domain name. We'll go to the next slide. Oh, that was it. Those are the four clarifications in which we are in the discussion right now, the last set of open issues. I don't know, Cyrus, if you would like to say something else, or are we ready to open?
Thank you, Francisco. I think we should really just open it up for a discussion, because that's the purpose of us being here. Perhaps the representatives from the contracted parties or anybody else for that matter that have any feedback, input, opinions on any of these issues, starting from number one, we can start a queue and go from there.
Thanks. Michael Nalen for the transcript. Just in terms of timelines, assuming that we're able to finalise and clarify for definitively, because there's already, I think this has already been through several iterations of clarifications, what kind of timeline are we looking at so that we can then make potential changes to our who is output or whatever is required based on these clarifications? Because from the registrar perspective, the abuse point of contact in the who is output, which is one of the items on this, is something that has been a serious pain point. So having some kind of timeline around that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Michele. This is Cyrus Namazi. Our thinking on the staff side has been 6 months, which is what we had in the original advisory that we posted in September, which we then subsequently put on hold in December. But let us know what you think, please.
Sorry, just coming back to Michele again for the transcript. 6 months. Okay, do you mean 6 months from when you publish the advisory? Or what? So he's nodding just for the transcript.
I'll answer. Actually, I was going to say 6 months from last July. Just kidding. But no, 6 months from the time we posted.
Yeah, no. It's just in terms of timelines. It's just that in the case of some advisories and some policy changes, we can implement from the moment that you publish it, or the policy is finalised. I just want to know that if you publish the advisory, let's just say, in 2 weeks' time, and we update our who is output in compliance with the contract based on the clarification, that I won't have to deal with... Okay, I'll say it. You want me to say it, don't you, Maggie? I won't have to deal with Maggie beating me up over it. Oh, God. No, but it's just in terms of that timeline is what it would be helpful for us to know. So if you're going to say, okay, we'll finalise the advisory in 2 to 3 weeks' time, you can implement then, that's fine, or you can't implement. I just need some kind of certainty of what we can do and what we can't do. Thank you.
Yeah, I got it. Thank you. This is Cyrus again. Yes, I think I said this already, but I'll say it again. From the time we posted, our thinking is 6 months is a reasonable length of time for implementation.
Sorry, Cyrus, I'm not trying to wreck your head. I just need to know that if you publish it, can I implement immediately, or do I have to wait 6 months?
You can implement immediately, yes.
Thank you.
You have up to 6 months.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I need...
Please. On the registry side, there is a non-implement before time that is in the, I think it's clarification 43 or something like that, regarding PDT, so that the PDT, this is for the registries. Yeah. there is a request to not implement before a certain date so that the systems are ready to cope with that.
Yeah, Joe Waldron from VeriSign. So first I'd like to just say that I think this is important that we're having these sessions. I think, this has been a very long discussion that started almost a year ago with the implementations or discussion about what the implementation looked like. And I think that this is really a new process within the community. And I know that the implementation and policy working group is working to really formalize a process for how we take policy and get the implementations coordinated. But I think it's also important. I think Francisco, on one of your slides, you had no new requirements, and I think some of the changes that you're asking for, from my perspective, are new requirements. So where there's a dispute or difference between implementation versus policy, I think that what needs to stay out of that discussion is where it turns into interpretation of either the policy or the agreement. And I think there needs to be a mechanism for how we resolve that, because I think some of these, when I read the contract and it says, here's an example output, that's an example output. It doesn't say every one of these fields has to be required in this order. I mean, you're making interpretations from that document. Some of those are stated, some of those are assumptions that are made, and I think that's where we got into some of the discussion about what's different in that example that's shown in the agreement and what the actual EPP spec is, because then you're talking about new requirements levied on registries to, in some cases, change the data that they're collecting from registrars. I mean, it has wide-ranging impact. So I think, I just want to kind of look at it from within that context.
So Jim Galvin from Phileas for the transcript. I don't know if you're going to step through these things in order, if you're just sort of collecting questions in any order, whatever it is that you want. So, but I'll jump in. I want to go back to the last item that you mentioned, Francisco, talking about clarifications 18 and 28 and the partial match issue. I'm not aware, and I partially wanted to ask one question of you directly. Is there anyone in the community that actually wanted that particular clarification, or is that just something that you're putting forth? I mean, as far as I know, the community is fine with things the way they are and allowing partial match. And in fact, it's been a long-standing feature that many registries have offered and have, and they don't want to change it, and they like doing it. So it seems odd that you would be asking to change something that people don't want to change or had no inclination, and I'm not aware of anyone that is in support of that particular recommendation. And then as a sidebar comment to that, it's interesting that you highlight that part of your rationale for it is the fact that there is an optional clarification and clause elsewhere that does allow for partial matching but says that you only want it on the web interface. And what I find odd about that is, I mean, I know this is how we do it. I'm sure that other people do it too. You've got one back end, and you've got multiple kinds of front ends on it. It's sort of odd that you're telling me that on this front end, I can't allow partial matching, and on this one over here, I'm going to figure out how to support it here and not there. I mean, I only have one back end service, and you're telling me I have to create some kind of access control for something that just doesn't seem to fit from history. You know, it's always been done a certain way, and doesn't seem to be any clear motivation for wanting to change it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. So I think it's the way we are looking at that issue is searchable quiz was clearly defined as a different service in the application stage. Someone that wanted to offer that, they will even get an extra point if memory serves. And there is a specific clause and a specific language on how it has to be offered in a specification for. So that's a completely different section, and also states that service is only offered in the web interface, not in port 43. And regarding registries implementing this, as far as I know, there is only one registry that implements this. I'm not aware of any other registry implementing this type of partial match. The other thing I would like to add is, if you read the specification for, there is a clear definition that says this is the query, domain name, and this is the response, and list what you will expect. There is nowhere there that says this type of output that you will see. If we go to the couple more slides, please, Fabian. There is nowhere in the specification for that will say this is the type of output that you will see if you're doing a partial match. There is nothing like that in specification 4.
So just a real quick follow-up. I mean, factually, everything that you say is correct, and I get that, and that's sort of what your response is in the clarification spreadsheet and all those discussions. But to me, it's more a case of it's an interpretation of the letter of what's in black and white versus the spirit of what people have been doing for the last 10 years. 20 years even. So it just seems odd that you fall back on that rather than inheriting what is currently available in the community and forcing a change on people when, you know, it doesn't feel like they need to do that. It's adding something that's always been there and the community already uses and takes advantage of. So anyway, thank you.
So I am interested. You said there's only one registry. This is Joe Waldron. There's only one registry that that supports partial match today?
That I'm aware of.
Okay.
I'm looking at it.
We do, for the record.
We have a question in Adobe chat.
Victor Oppenheimer, IPM. The question is from Elaine from Donuts. And she's asking, what is the reason for restricting the output to exact match only?
I think I answered that question.
Okay, I have a second question from Cal Fair. I'm sorry about your last name, I'm butchering. From ARI, regarding the do not implement time for registries, does this apply for registries who are no longer in PDT?
That clause is for PDT only.
Sorry?
PDT only. So those that are going to PDT, that's where they have the not implement before.
Just going to jump in.
Yep. Put us down as another registry that does partial matching. So that's three, VeriSign Affiliates. That's four, VeriSign Affiliates, Newstar, ARI. And if you count the number of TLDs, that's probably a fairly significant number of them as well. I'm just wondering, what are we worried about? What's the harm? Who's getting hurt? Like, what's the concern?
So, like I said, it's just about what is there in spec 4.
Yeah, which makes the, you know, just because it doesn't match something, let me
put it this way. If I'm a user of Whois and I want to get the information, let's look at the screen. And I want to get the information for the domain name foo.example. How do I get it?
I think you're using an example of the behavior of one particular partial match who is.
That's the only one I know. That's what I was referring to.
Because mine certainly wouldn't work like that unless you explicitly asked for a search query. It's not by default.
Oh, so that's precisely the point. If you want to offer a partial match with some other way, for example, by adding an option, that is a different thing. We're talking about the when someone requests the Whois for a specific domain name, if you are not giving back the domain name information, that's the behavior we're referring to.
But remember that this came from the problem in the contract where the name server, and I know you proposed to fix it in the clarifications, but where the name servers were meant to be matched without a name server qualifier. Right, so when somebody did a whois for a domain string, and you had to deal with a scenario where that matched both a host object and a domain object.
So that's one of the reasons. The other is how do you query the domain name?
Well, most of us, when you want to get the domain name, you would do whois domain and the domain name, and that would give you the information for the domain. And if you wanted to clarify that you wanted the host, you would do whois host and the name.
So the I guess the issue at hand here is having an uniform way to query. If as a community we were to agree that that's the way to go.
But we've all pretty much done it the same way, and we've been doing it for many, 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 many years. So it's not like this is just a convention we came up with overnight. Nobody wrote it down in an RFC. I mean, that's the only thing that we don't have, but we can do that tomorrow if you'd like. It doesn't take that long.
So I have Michele and then Jim.
Sorry, Michele for the record. I think somebody could shut off your mic, please, because it's not only a certain number that will work. I think part of the problem is the example you're using, because you're doing a query without specifying the Whois server, which means that in some cases, that's what you have up on the screen.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
No, you it, does, have the it same. Does actually matter.
I can show you right now an example.
Just please hold on. Because if you do a Whois query on, so like whoisgodaddy.com, you will get back something like that, which is a bunch of strings and general weirdness, depending on the Whois client you use. But if you were to do a who is against the VeriSign, directly against VeriSign or directly against the registrar, you wouldn't.
You will. That's how it works. That's the kind of behavior we're talking about.
Okay.
If people like, I can show it live, but...
It is X-rated, though.
Can someone make me a presenter?
Poof, you're a presenter.
Because this is Cyrus. I think I'd like all of us to somewhat focus on not the letter of the contract at the moment, but what is the right thing to do. And I hear some of you saying, well, this is how we've done it for I don't know how many years, and, you know, what's the reason to change it? But maybe there's an opportunity, regardless of what the contract says. And the contract, you know, did go through several rounds of public comment to become what it is, so we should keep that in mind as well. But if there is an opportunity for clarification, better output of who is, I think we should be open-minded to do it and have the discussion sort of with that mindset. So just a thought. Jim, please.
Yeah, so, I mean, in line with that, I think the issue here is that you have a name which ambiguously could be one of two different things. And so in that case, you're going to get output which says to you, oh, gee, you know, which one of these things did you want? Versus an explicit query for a partial match, which is typically done by putting a star in one place or another as part of the query or something like that, right, the asterisk. I think that, as I understand the direction that you're going in, you're falling back and saying, okay, rather than the fact that we have each found a solution collectively for presenting the fact that we've been given an ambiguous query and we need a way to tell the user that you did that so that they can do something more precise to get an answer, you're falling back and you're saying, you know what? What you should do is only give one answer. And so what that means is if I get a query which is ambiguous, I have to say no answer because, you know, there's no way for me to respond to that kind of query. I mean, it just feels like you've kind of gone in the wrong direction here. We're trying to provide a service to the user, and you're explicitly disallowing that by deciding to fall back on doing that.
So the... searchability, like I said, is a different clause. But this is the example that I was talking about. As you can see, I'm asking directly the registry who is that I look up in IANA, and I put a domain name, and this is what I get. There is no data of the domain name.
So explain for everybody here who may not be as technical what you did and what we're seeing.
So what I did is I went to IANA and asked for the who is server of a particular TLD.com. And I copy the server of the server name of the whois server for .com, put it in the whois query, which is where is the I don't see oh here. So this is the whois server for .com, and I'm asking for Microsoft.com, and instead of getting the information for Microsoft.com, I get this, which is a list of name servers, I suppose, and you can see all the interesting stuff that people put there. That's what we're saying is probably not PG rated.
So let me ask the question from, I guess, the 3-4 of you who have a strong opinion that it should remain the same. Tell us why it should remain the same.
I'll start. So this is Joe, and I know Jim Gould's on the line, so I would invite him to respond as well, but... I mean, so you're right that this is long-standing behavior that we would be removing. I'm not sure that we have a lot of data on how often this gets used or who would have a change to a long-standing behavior. So I think that's one factor. I think the other question or the other issue is from the query that Francisco put in, his question is ambiguous because he didn't say whether he was looking for a domain name or for a host name. So, and I think that was Jim's point. At that point, I give back a response that says nothing because I don't know whether you're asking, for a host name that starts with Microsoft.com or the Microsoft.com domain name. So, I think this is not only something that is long-standing for us, but for who is users. So I would ask the question of what problem are we really trying to solve? Have we gotten complaints, criticisms, security and stability advisories? What problem are we trying to solve for?
Just to clarify things, because we're showing .com and kind of picking on maybe the .com functionality here, but we're not talking about .com at all here, because the .com registry agreement actually specifies this behavior in great detail and how it works to the partial match and what codes you put in. But that's not specified. We're only talking about new gTLDs here for this spec, and it doesn't have that language that's in .com. So we're not at all saying we're changing .com. And so I was just a little worried about confusion because we put the .com example there too.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a very important.
Hold on, Chris. I had Rubens in the queue.
Oh, sorry.
Please. Thank you.
Rubens, queue for the record. I think we are coming back round and round for two themes in this discussion. One of them is that we are treating specification 4 as a technical specification, but it's only a specification in legal terms, but not in technical terms. Technical specification would define behaviors, would define parameters, and we are all trying to read into spec 4, and sometimes I can read something that says, oh, this is completely specified, and then we disagree. And sometimes registry reading to spec 4 say, hey, this is allowed because it's not written as disallowed, and we try that. So every time we keep going in that direction of thinking that spec 4 is written the way we would like it to be, we end up going nowhere because it's not. So we shouldn't treat spec 4 as a real technical specification. It's only, matter of fact, it's only a placeholder that is waiting for us to replace it with a real technical specification. So what you need to come about is what is of the best interest of the community to do, but we shouldn't try to read either way. It won't work. It's not a technical specification. It's just an example. I had one other question, but I'll let the query run and accept myself at the end of it.
So the point that was just made about how this is actually fully specified in VeriSign's agreement and that we're not talking about what VeriSign do, we're also not talking about what affiliates do with .info, we're also not talking about what happens with .org, we're also not talking about what happens with .biz, who all behave like this, by the way. Wouldn't it actually be more confusing for users to make the new TLDs work differently to the old TLDs? Wouldn't we prefer them to actually work the same? Especially if, after this clarification, we all go and disable this behavior for new TLDs, but com, biz, and info maintain the old behavior. Isn't that more confusing?
Well, this is Cyrus, for the record. I mean, I can state my own opinion, but I'd like to ask actually other people here to perhaps attempt an answer to Chris, who are not registry operators. Michele?
Michele, for the record, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I couldn't care less. I cannot get excited about this. Sorry. I mean, I can get excited about various aspects of who is. This is not one of them. It really isn't.
And why are you here?
No, because there's other things in here that are of interest to me. No, but I mean, to Chris's point, I mean, I think he's raising a very valid point. I don't often agree with him, but I agree with him now.
I mean, I can tell you from my perspective, this is not I can, but I'm thinking if we were to keep everything at status quo, because we've done it, you know, this way for so many years, and if we changed it, it would cause confusion, then there wouldn't actually be enhancement improvements to a whole bunch of things. So I think we should focus the discussion on, is this going to provide value in sort of upping the quality factor in the industry for us as a whole? And this is a perspective from which I'm coming. It's not to impose some black and white letters of a contract or anything. I think the mindset should be, you know, is there a value in doing this, and collectively decide on raising the bar for ourselves without imposing undue burden, obviously, on the registry operators who have to implement and change their systems, all of that. That's the answer, at least, that I personally am looking for. And again, I invite all of you to also come in and provide your perspective. Jim, please.
Yeah, so Jim Galvin for the transcript. But Cyrus, with all due respect, you know, you're asking what is upping the value, and I think that comes back to the original question of what problem are you trying to solve? You know, I mean, I think it's also fair to assess that this is the baseline today, okay? So is it more valuable to remove a feature? I mean, what problem is that solving? What is that making better, you know, in providing this clarification? And then to tie it, another comment, so that's one answer to that. Don was offering the comment about, let's be clear, you know, this is what .com does, it's the old registries, and coming back to what Chris was saying about, well, you know, confusion between old registries and new registries. I mean, as a registry operator, as a service provider, you know, we have dozens of TLDs, and we're going to have 200 by the time this thing is over. If you're only going to apply this to new TLDs and not old ones, you know, now you're obligating me to two different systems. You know, and I question how that is somehow upping the value or improving things. It doesn't allow me to have any economies of scale. I can't consolidate since I have behaviors that are different. And then the third observation that I would make is certainly changing who is and directory services to be better about it is a good thing, right? I mean, there's been a lot of work in that area, and as Michele was pointing out, I'm sure there are lots of things that many of us can get torqued about in one way or another with respect to who is. I make the observation that there are changes coming, right? We have the new RDAP-based system out of the WIRDS working group, and there will be a lot of fundamental things that are going to change at that time. So then I fall back, tying back again to the where's the upward value, you know, what is the problem we're solving? Why are we making such significant changes to who is, when why don't we just wait for this total wholesale replacement of who is and do all of this then? I mean, why shouldn't the baseline be where we are today? Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. We have a comment or a question online. Go ahead.
Yeah, Victor Oppenheimer, RPM. The comment is from Cal from ARI, and his comment is, I agree that spec 4 is not a genuine technical spec. We need multiple examples of data, including when data is missing.
Just a quick comment to what Jim said. So I agree, RDAP is what is coming soon, and that's what we should be focusing our energies. So that's what we're trying to close this as soon as possible. The thinking is RDAP is going to take some time to get it out, right? I don't know, a year, two, who knows? And then you probably need to still keep port 43, who is, I would think, some period of time. I don't know, 1 year, two, who knows? So we're talking about still a few years in which you are going to have who is there. What we're trying to do here is leave who is in a state that is acceptable for these few years that is still going to be there. The other thing that you mentioned in regards to, sorry, the other thing that in regards to RDAP that I was thinking is from these clarifications that we are showing here, these four, these two, this one probably will not be an issue once we are in RDAP, because in RDAP it's a clear definition for lookup and searchability. There is no ambiguity there. However, if we look at the other two, I'm circling back to those. These affect what is displayed there. So these two clarifications, we need to resolve them one way or another. It doesn't matter if we have RDAP or we have port 43 who is, we need to get to something. I would suggest that we perhaps focus on these two, clarification 40 and clarification 2, and see if we can get to something, because it will apply to both what we have now, port 43, and what we will have in the future, RDAP.
Thank you. Michele?
Michele, for the record. Cyrus, I appreciate what you're saying about
improving things and everything else. But I mean, Francisco has just pointed out the obvious, that a lot of the stuff around who is only temporary in many respects, because everything's going to change. So with that in mind, in order to save everybody headaches and consistency, you know, why impose a technical burden on the registries without there being any clear scenario where the status quo is causing any harm? I mean, if you can give examples of where this is causing harm, issues, headaches, or if somebody else can, then that's a case for forcing a change. But if you can't, then, you know, it's addressed in the ARS and all that, so just move on. I mean, unless I'm missing something. I don't know, am I missing something?
I don't know if you're missing something, Michele. This is Cyrus. I think this is actually, this is exactly why we're having this discussion. So it's emerging that, you know, issues 18 and 28 actually could be addressed by, you know, the transition to RDAP, which I guess all of us are bound to do. And maybe that provides a different perspective into how to achieve the ultimate goal. And maybe it's the way of RDAP. I'm not opposed to it. I'm here to really help us facilitate to get to closure to something that, you know, benefits everyone in the community. So perhaps maybe we should focus the discussion on clarifications 1 and 2 that Francisco suggested. Rubens?
Towards that goal of focusing on those clarifications, this goes back to another recurring theme, which is you reading Spec 4 as a data collection requirement. Spec 4 is a data output requirement. So we can only output data that we have. And if there is the need to have for the data to be present, that's a data collection requirement, something that's currently not in the agreement. So both those two specifications try to read an output specification as the need to have that information, which is something that is not there. So those two would be actually be the embryo of something we could write together, which is a data collection requirement, a data collection specification. So that would be the right way to do it, not to force it read an output specification as a data collection one.
This is Francisco. So I just so we're clear, so you're saying, Rubens, in something like this, it would be okay to not have these two fields, which I believe are really the only ones that are an issue in qualification 2. So it will be okay to have in a domain name output the phone and the street field for registrant or contacts.
Depending on registry policy, yes, some registry policies might see that as privacy issues. Some registry policies might see the other way around. Say we have a policy that requires registrants to have physical addresses like banks or something like that. So this is actually a registry choice of whether these need to be collected and displayed. So this will go more towards policy than an output specification.
So this is Francisco again. I'm certainly not a lawyer. I'm an engineer. So what I would say here is that the way I read it is, if something is telling you have to show something, then, well, whatever follows is what is implied. So if you have to show something, then perhaps it implies you have to collect it.
Do you want a blanks? Yeah. Say, hey, field, dot, nothing.
Then you are not showing it, right?
No, I'm showing the information that we have regardless. We don't have any, so we would only display blank lines with those headers, and this would add no value to the community. just more lines with no contents to display.
So that if that were what the community want, I guess that's how it will be. But I just wanted to also clarify another thing that you mentioned, the privacy side of this. I think we should not confuse those things. When that privacy discussion, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding, there is another set of discussions that need to happen that are beyond those two fields. There are more things that people, for some reasons, believe they should not be showing, and that's not what we're talking about here.
Thank you. Jim, are you in the queue?
Thank you. This is Jim Gallen, but you know, I'm going to yield. Never mind. Okay.
So I'd like to ask a question. What is the pushback here? Why is the pushback? What is it that, you know, is creating pain for you in doing it this way? So Rubens and then this gentleman whose name I don't know.
I can say specifically for the registrar query is that it's actually conflicting with the data escrow specification. The data escrow specification had a different set of information that registries should have from registrars. And by complying with that specification, it has a different data model than Spec 4, you either would have to have both data models to satisfy both requirements, or you could follow the one specification that is actually a technical specification, which is the data escrow, which is correctly and technically sound, and then answer that. So one of the reasons of the pressure is that there is incompatibility in the agreement between the data models for registered information.
So just one comment here. This is Francisco on the comment about discrepancies between data escrow and who is output. The way I see it is they are different things. Data escrow has a different purpose than who is output. Data escrow is for the purpose of being able to recover from a catastrophic registry failure if the registry goes to Ibero. So you need a certain set of information. In the case of the registrars, it's perhaps less information that you need, because even if a TLD goes to an Ibero, the Ibero provider has to have a direct relationship with the registrar. So basically what the Ibero needs is just to know what the registrar is that it needs to have a relation in order to manage the domain names. In the case of the who is output, the purpose, as I understand it, it will be different. It will be for a user to be able, for example, to contact the registrar, and that's where I think having the contacts for a registrar come in use.
Thank you. Alex?
Thank you. Alex Meyerhofer from Nikto.at, backend operator for a couple of DLDs. You asked before that we should think about things that provide actual value, and specifically the contacts of the registrar are, in my opinion, to no value at all, because if you look at the data structure of a registrar is registered with ICANN. He gets assigned an IANA ID, and copying that data that is already registered with ICANN across all 2,000 TLDs creates a massive burden to each and every registry and each and every registrar, because the registry must collect data from the registrar, which is already publicly available via the ICANN registrar database anyways. So essentially, for the registrar contact, if you look at it closely, it would be completely sufficient if there was just the IANA ID, yeah? Because everybody could look up with that IANA ID or a link to the respective entry in the ICANN database of that registrar. So what we are doing here is we are copying information to 2,000 TLDs by, 3,000 registrars. So we are essentially creating 6 million of redundant objects. And that is, I don't think it creates value, coming back to what you said before. So,
thank you. Did you want to respond?
Regarding the concrete pain that we feel, we are one of the registry operators who didn't implement the contacts for the registrar. because we felt that outputting the IN ID and the referral URI would be good enough for anybody to find that registrar and then find contact information. So we would have to go back to all the registrars that have signed up with our registries and collect that information.
Let's go to Chris and then Michele.
I think Mike wants to answer.
Oh, sure. Mike has a direct response, and then we'll go to Chris.
So this is Mike Zupke, ICANN staff. And so just one point of clarification, and that's the data that ICANN makes available for registrars' contacts is quite limited. It's one field. This is the public contact data that registrars tell us it's okay to publish. Typically, it's a customer service person. It's not somebody who might resolve technical issues related to the registrar or billing or other sorts of issues that might exist that are commonly populated in registries, who is data for registrars.
Thanks, Mike. Chris?
So, choosing the right words. With respect to... I'm getting a bit confused about which clarifications we're talking about, and I think we're collectively talking about them all as a whole, I think is what's happening. There's a clarification which is referring to specifically displaying fields for data if the data isn't present, just to demonstrate that data is blank, effectively, which is the one I thought we were talking about. But now that's clarification two, I think, if I remember correctly. And then this clarification 40 here is talking about requiring additional details of the registrar to be displayed in the WHOIS output. And I think most, if not all, of these clarifications come from interpretation of what's written in specification 4. And not all of them, but for some of these, you could find equally as many arguments as to why the implemented interpretation is correct as opposed to the interpretation that's being proposed because of the issues that people have raised, the fact that that's not an actual real proper technical standards document, etc. I guess my point is why make the registries that interpreted it one particular way, which could easily be argued to be correct, go through the financial burden of having to go and re-implement in a different interpretation if there's no harm. So show me how the fact that they've interpreted it this way is causing a problem. And as registries, we don't want to cause problems, so we'll do the fixes if that's required. But if I've interpreted it and implemented it one way, and that interpretation is, you know, one that's arguably in line with that specification, right? Everyone's going to have different opinions on that. But there are things that are going to be black or white. It's black or white that's not what it says or that is what it says. But most of these clarifications, which is why they even exist in the first place, is because that spec is so vague on certain things. It doesn't have a position on whether missing data should be displayed or not. It's silent on the issue. It doesn't say one way or the other. So if someone's implemented where they display the missing data, which, by the way, I do. My who is shows the fields when they're empty. So I'm actually not even hurt by this clarification, but that's not my point. My point is if the people that chose to interpret it the other way, if their implementation is not causing harm, if it's not hurting one, if there's no security problem, if you know we aren't getting complaints from end users, etc., where's the value in making anyone do this change? And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Michele, you were in the queue, and then I have Joe, and then...
We have also a question.
Okay, so after Michele, we go online and then come back here.
Yeah, no, just Michele, for the record, on the thing about the registrar contact, my understanding, I mean, maybe I've missed something again, I mean, but generally speaking, the registrar contact that gets output in WHOIS is possibly the name of the registrar, a link to the registrar's website, not much else. There could be another bit of a contact. Replacing that with IAN IDs is completely unhelpful. As a user of WHOIS, I'd find that completely unhelpful. I'd prefer to be able to actually see a registrar name, possibly adding the IAN ID as well. If for example, I'll pick on Enom because they're big enough and ugly enough. Enom has multiple accreditations, so you know, having the IAN ID of the specific accreditation would probably be helpful. We have one, so whether, but if I had to, if I was a Whois user and I had to do a lookup on every single IAN ID any time I needed to do something. So, for example, as a registrar, my customer service staff regularly have to do a Whois lookup to see which registrar our domain name is with. To see, is the domain name with us? Is it with a company that we may have had a reseller account with in the past? Is it with one of our competitors? Has the domain name ended up with a company that is known as an aftermarket sales registrar, for example? So if I see a domain name associated with a company that specializes in premium names, I can safely say to my client, if you want to actually get that domain name, you're going to be looking at five or six figures, whereas if it happens to be with, you know, one of my competitors who isn't in that space, and go, well, you know, maybe it's just expired with them or whatever. There's a multitude of different things there, but it's also inconsistent with several of the Whois policies that have developed over the last few years, where with the Whois has been modified to make it more accessible in some areas. Now, with the next evolutions at a technical level, you're moving to a more XML-like, parsable, consistent thing. But actually putting in IDs that people then have to look up is, in many respects, not helpful. That's my own personal opinion, not speaking on behalf of the registrars, just speaking on behalf of myself.
Thanks, Mikhail. I think Rubens has a direct response to that, and then we go online.
Just a clarification. This clarification is about a registrar query. So it's about a registrar query, not a domain query. It's a query that the user already specified registrar something, like registrar Black Knight. So the user already specified which name of the registrar. So this usually follows up a query that the registry output the domain registrar being Black Knight. So, and then the user says, oh, who the hell is Black Knight? And then it asks.
Then I've misunderstood it completely. Sorry.
Yes.
Because that's not a query I
yeah,
that most
but
people
then do. I have a question for you. If a user sees something that say admin contact and technical contact, would the user be savvy enough to say, oh, this is an administrative matter or a technical matter, or won't he just email all the contacts that he find there to see if someone answers his complaint? What do you think from a customer service perspective?
Thanks, Rubens. In the interest of time, let's move on. We go online. We had a question or a comment?
Yes, it might have been answered, but it's from Carl ARI again. Would a static link to IANA to an IANA registrar
site be better than adding the object?
Site be better than
adding the object.
Than adding the object.
I think it was answered already.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So let's go to Joe.
Thanks. Joe Waldron. So I'm going to answer your question, or I'm going to give you at least my perspective on the question of why the pushback. And I think it's a lot of the reasons that we've been discussing in terms of interpretation, right? So, you know, Chris interprets the agreement and the requirements differently than we do. And I think that you have to expect that within a contract there is going to be interpretation. And I think having, you know, a clarifying document that has the weight of implementing or requiring new requirements, and these clearly are new requirements. This is expanding on the scope of what's in the agreement and removing our ability to interpret that agreement as it's written. And I think that that's part of the pushback. And I know that we've even had discussions, you know, with Francisco about whether these really are new requirements or not. And I think from my perspective, clearly, where I've got to go back and go through yet another engineering cycle, implement changes, those are new requirements. Where you've got to go back and have changes made to pre-delegation testing before you can even start testing this, those are new requirements. So that to me, is a fundamental concerned that we have a document that is published as a clarification that has the weight of adding new requirements as a burden onto the parties that signed that agreement and didn't have that agreement with those new requirements.
Thanks, Joe. Francisco, do you have a response, or should we go to Chris?
Just very quickly. Let's differentiate between a registry having to make changes to their systems in order to comply with a clarification, as opposed to a clarification providing new requirements. I just would say there is a difference there.
Jim?
Thank you, Jim Galvin from Aphelia. So I want to agree with both Chris and Joe, and just give our own perspective on what's happening. I really have to fall back on the idea that I appreciate the goal. I think the principle of wanting to make things definite and deterministic is the right thing to do, and really want to support that in principle. What I would add to what both Joe and Chris have said is that feels like it's something which would be most appropriate for the next version of WHOIS, which we know is coming. So trying to create changes or suggestions, clarifications that impose obligations on standing, legacy systems for something which is ultimately going to be pushed out the door anyway. I mean, that's really the burden, and that's why you're getting pushback. Suggesting that we're going to be obligated to do things a certain way as opposed to the way that we've been doing them for, 10 or 15 years or whatever it's been, purely because it's a wasted effort in the sense that it's going to be thrown away. And that's really, the burden here. I mean, I appreciate that one has to do an implementation anyway to replace it, but why am I doing it twice? Why do I have to fix up the old version and fix up the new? If there's no harm being done, which gets back to what Chris said, if there's no real harm and it's just a matter of interpretation, why not just let it ride for the old versions for right now? I think is a preferred solution.
Thanks, Jim. This is Cyrus for the record. So two questions for you, and these are naive questions because I'm not actually technically in tune with the details of this. To which up-and-coming WHOIS were you referring? You said it's going to replace
the weird work, RDAP. Francisco knows.
But is RDAP applicable to clarification 40?
I'm sorry.
Is RDAP applicable?
Right, so the differentiation is what I was saying before, is that clarifications 2 and 40 will still be needed, or some sort of that clarification will still be needed if we have RDAP. Those two are not solved by RDAP. The others two, yes, they disappear completely, but 2 and 40, they don't.
Yeah, so the distinction that you have to make then is ultimately the technical detail of what's implemented. I mean, I appreciate that you probably want these clarifications, and that's fine, but they should be obligated against the RDAP solution, not against the WHOIS solution. So then not against the Port 43 solution is the distinction that I would make.
The other question, a naive question I wanted to ask all of you, I guess, who are speaking up, is why do you think Specification 4 is written this way? I mean, if you wanted to keep things the way they were, then... I actually would have slept a lot better because I negotiated this contract with you guys until we got to the end of it. Help me understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only observation I would make is not everything can be caught the first time around. I mean, contractual negotiations are probably handled by a slightly different set of people than the developers who are actually doing it and looking at the details. I mean, I don't think it's unusual for this kind of stuff to get missed. I mean, let's even look at how PDP has been succeeding over time. I mean, we've certainly been through a lot of them with a lot of registries, and let me tell you, it's been an interesting experience, ranging just from the fact that the PDT testers have different ideas about what the rules are. So we'll pass with one PDT tester and fail with the next one. I mean, I don't think there's anything special going on here. It's not unusual. These things happen. You just work through them.
In spite of several rounds of, posting this for public comment and such. Okay, fair enough. Joe?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's just that, it essentially followed the same form and template that had been there, in previous agreements. You know, there were some modifications that were made that were unique and specific to the new TLDs, but I don't think that there was that much forethought into, you know, all of those, the details that we're talking about now were just not envisioned in the discussions. And again, I keep going back to the same point. It sounds like a broken record, but, you know, when we read that agreement, you know, we read it, and it, I mean, the example that's used is an example. It doesn't say this is the definitive answer. I can take it to the extreme. I like thinking that way, but, you know, so bear with me. If you want to take it to the extreme and that example must be exactly followed, then every WHOIS response will result in a response that says, example.tld. And, you know, and we'll give exactly what that response is. You know, there is...
We're definitely well into the happy hour.
Okay, I don't think... Yeah.
I like that you have...
So I just wanted to also point out, I think, you know, and Tom really brought this up, there are a number of WHOIS initiatives going on. I think everybody's aware of that, right? So it's not just, you know, additional work to do this, right? It's one that we've already done it, right? We already had one round of advisories that we implemented, and that's already been done. This is replacing that. But we also have, at least in our case, we've got work that we're doing on thick WHOIS. There is the internationalized and translation and transliteration of WHOIS. There's all of the work going on within the GNSO on the EWG recommendations and what they're going to take up. I mean, so we have an ongoing stream of work that needs to be done over many, many years that is just, you know, it's going to go on and on. And where is it? Where are resources best utilized? So for me to spend another engineering cycle and going back and making changes that are going to have an impact downstream to people who have an expectation of how WHOIS is going to work, I don't think we get a lot of benefit from that.
Thanks, sir. Chris, and then we need to start wrapping it up. We have about 3 minutes. We should do it post-mortem.
Sure. So to try and directly answer your question as to why Spec 4 is the way that it is, I don't think any registry operator in this room thinks that they aren't compliant with Spec 4, right? And that's the fundamental point, right? We're totally actually fine with Spec 4, and we all believe we are compliant with it, right? Because of those interpretation issues. So there was nothing for us to fix in it.
We passed PDP.
Yeah, there was nothing in it for us to fix in it because we read it, we interpreted it the way that we interpreted it, and it suited our needs, so we didn't need anything changed. It's just now we are fundamentally just having an argument over interpretation. That's really all that's happening.
Any other questions or comments? There was one online, so this is the last one, then we'll conclude it.
The question is from Matt Duffert, and when does ICANN expect to have the final version of the advisory?
Oh, that. Michele?
This is what I was about to ask. I mean, just speaking now, I am speaking with the registrar stakeholder group hat firmly on. There's only one or two parts of this advisory that have a direct and tangible impact on the registrars, but it's an impact that, for some of our members, is huge. And the longer this delays, the more it's costing them in customer service because it's to do with the abuse contact point. So while I appreciate that you may wish to go backwards and forwards for several more weeks around the registries, and I understand this is an issue for them, from the registrar side, we would really, really appreciate closure on at least the aspect that impacts us directly. With all due respect, humbly bowing before you, on bended knee, and doing all those kind of things that I never do for you, Cyrus.
I've never heard you say anything remotely like that actually.
I'm supplicating. I'm supplicating over right here. It doesn't happen.
On that note. Yeah. Now, your point is well taken, Michele. I mean, I certainly don't have any appetite for dragging this on and on and on. And the objective really is for us to come to an amicable, mutually satisfactory resolution. Because you have to keep in mind, and this I mean that to our registry partners here, that ICANN's role here is to represent the entire community and, of course, the registrants and the consumers and such and on one hand. And then on the other hand, you know, we have a contract that does have a set of somewhat black and white requirements in it. To Ruben's point, it's not a technical specification, but then it never envisioned having the need for a technical specification. I don't even know if the legacy TLDs are following a technical specification or not. So my intent, my hope is that we can come up to some meeting grounds where we can say this is, you know, what makes sense in light of, you know, what's coming down the pike imminently, somewhat imminently, the RDAP. You know, I think it's in the queue to be published. There is, you know, the thick who is work that's going on. There's EWG sort of in the longer term horizon, and come up with something that makes sense, that wraps some of these requirements together in a manageable development cycle for you guys that, again, enhances our industry and, you know, does what it's supposed to do. So my suggestion is for us perhaps, we had a very good discussion, I think, to go back and maybe take a day or two from our side and maybe your side and see if there are things that, you know, you guys would like to put on the table as reasonable and then for us to do the same thing and see if we can close it. The last thing I want us to do is to come back and say, well, you know, here's staking the ground and we think it's this, and you guys say, no, we think it's that, because that's a lose-lose proposition. I don't want us to get there. Any closing remarks, Jim, please?
Quick logistical question. Where's the table that we'll follow up on the discussion with, which mailing list or whatever?
So we can use ETLDTech. You know that.
Any other comments or questions or remarks? Very good. Thank you all very much. So we can conclude the session.